Chapter 14. Bones. Selin and I barely resemble the girls we were the last time we saw him. But Darren is still just Darren, a few inches taller. The sometimes annoying little brother we love to bully, but would die to protect. Except Selin casts a nervous glance at Darren, slouching against the wall with his pipes. He tosses the hair that's always covering his eyes, and she jerks her gaze away, blushing before I even touch her with the brush. She sighs. Bet's a bet. Oh, you got the better end of it, I say. Like night I did. Selin looks like she's sucked a lemon. You're still the pretty one, even with your face scrubbed and mine painted up like some Angerian debutante. Again, she glances at Darren. She knows he can hear every word we're saying with those bat ears of his. But he was never one for banter. Like old times, he just follows us around, keeping his distance unless we corner him. He'll talk when he's got something worth saying, but he prefers to let his pipes speak for him. Darren isn't handsome, like Perrin. He isn't tall and beautiful, with muscular arms and a booming voice, like Oscar. Darren Bales is shy and quiet, where the young men who tend to catch Selin's notice are loud and boisterous. His face is round and soft-cheeked, when I know she prefers a square jaw. Yet, Selin's eyes keep drifting to him in the mirror as I work, watching Darren's puckered lips kiss each mouthpiece in its turn as they dance across his pipes. I can't imagine shining on Darren Bales. Yet I can't help but feel a bit of jealousy at the attention Selin gives him. After all, Darren Bales was the first boy Selin ever played kissy with. It was years ago, all of us children, another of our ridiculous bets. Both of them made faces after, and no one's mentioned it since. Still, the three of us had always been inseparable, and something changed that day. I don't know if it was them or me, but it itched that the two of them shared something so intimate without me. I followed Darren around for a week after, hoping for a chance to kiss him, if only to correct the imbalance. He was oblivious, of course. Grandmum says boys always are, when you're the one chasing them. Summer ended, and like every year, Darren went back to Tibbetts Brook to help with reaping. Mrs. Bales and Darren came to Hollow every spring after sowing, and stayed until reap. I vowed to settle things the next year. But they didn't come back the next year. Or the year after. Or since. Court gossips say Mother and Mrs. Bales had an argument about Darren's dar, but no one really knows for sure. After 5 years, I've lost all desire to kiss Darren, and I know it's foolish to be jealous of Selin's attention, but I see him glance back at Selin when she isn't looking, and I worry one of them is going to end up with a broken heart. Even at night, the thick velvet curtains are drawn in Mother's library, blocking the faint starlight from tainting her spells. Mother and Mrs. Bales are sipping tea and talking pleasantly when we arrive, but I know the look of women feigning friendship to hide their dislike of each other. It isn't hard to imagine why. Mother and Arlen Bales played a bit of kissy of their own before he married Mrs. Bales. No one did wrong, but I'm starting to wonder if kissing is worth all the trouble it brings. But that can't be the whole story. After coming every summer for 10 years, something must have happened to make them stop. Something that took a demon attack to overcome. Olive, Mrs. Bales gets to her feet. Aren't you pretty as a sunrise? If anyone else had said that while my face was scrubbed clean, I would have argued. But I doubt Mrs. Bales has ever so much as painted her lips or put on anything that wasn't homespun. Her long hair is in a simple braid, tied on itself. Yet still she carries herself like a queen, and gets treated like one. I forgot how much I crave her approval. Aunt Wren, I reach out and she takes me into her arms. I missed you.
Missed you too, girl, Mrs. Bales says. Your da sends his love as well.
I pull back to look at her. You've seen my da?
Darren and I skate down there some winters, Mrs. Bales says. Still warm in Crasia during the cold months. Been a while, but your da asks about you every time.
The words hit me harder than the compliment.
Mother clears her throat. She is holding a pair of polished goldwood boxes.
One she hands to Selin, and the other to me. I open it to find a midnight blue hooded cloak, much like the one Mother wears. A cloak worthy of royalty, embroidered along the seams and back with hundreds of silver wards stitched in Mother's flawless hand. I throw it around my shoulders, and it drifts about like breeze, then settles to cover me almost completely. Selin finds a similar cloak in her box, green and brown with wards embroidered in thread of gold.
Knight, this must have taken forever to make.
I've had time, Mother says. I knew this day was coming. I just thought it was a bit further off.
Didn't make one for Darren? I ask.
Darren has one already, Mother says. The one I made for his father.
Being to the core and back, Mrs. Bales says, kept me safe in the dark below.
Keep them close as night falls, Mother says.
Even in places you think safe, Mrs. Bales adds.
I am out of patience for meaningless platitudes that tell us nothing.
Safe from what, exactly?
Maybe nothing, Mrs. Bales says. I look to Mother, reminding her with my eyes of her promise. Mother purses her lips. The crown prince of the demon hive. The Crasians call him Alagai Kaa.
Ha! Selin says. Now I know you're spinning ale stories.
Anyone with half a brain knows not to take tenderest tales on their face, Mrs. Bales agrees. But Alagai Kaa is real.
I helped your da's capture him to lead us down into the demon hive.
My chest tightens, and it's hard to breathe. I know the story as well as any, but every version I've read ends the same way.
Wasn't he destroyed in the Deliverer's Purge?
Mrs. Bales shrugs.
Probably. Probably?
I can barely form the word.
Is everything I think I know about the war a lie? Things got sticky when we reached the hive, Mrs. Bales says. Demon broke his chains and found a chance to cut and run.
Darren's father killed every demon for more than 100 miles in every direction, Mother says. We hoped he was caught in the purge along with the others.
And might be he was, Mrs. Bales says, or run off for good, hiding at the edge of the world with his little stump tail between his legs.
The dice are unclear on this, Mother says. To them, all mind demons are Alagai Kaa. But something has taken control of the remaining callings, and it knows who you are. She looks to me and Darren and Selin.
All of you. It lacks only opportunity to strike, and we must keep it that way until it can be found and eliminated.
My anger is doused by cold fear. Can I never leave the Great Ward again? Mrs. Bales puts her hands on her hips.
It's a mistake, not bringing Olive's da into this.
Mother shakes her head.
If we use magic to communicate over the miles, there's a chance the mind might intercept it.
Mrs. Bales rolls her eyes, but doesn't argue.
Then I'll just skate down there and tell him to come. He can travel almost as fast as me.
Again, Mother shakes her head. Inevera will never allow it. She doesn't trust us together.
Hey, you hear that can happen when you stick a woman's husband behind her back,
Mrs. Bales says.
Want them both in any event.
Unbelievably, Mother accepts the barb. I don't trust her any more than she does me. She removes the dice from the pouch at her waist
and moves to her casting table, goldwood coated with pristine white felt, edges raised to prevent the dice from rolling off. I can cast as well as in Evera. Mrs. Bales snorts. Eh, well, let's be on with it then. Mother's dice look nothing like father's. The art of foretelling requires 7 Alagai Hora, dice carved out of demon bones, each with a different shape and number of sides. Wards carved onto every face focus their power and tell a tale of what might be, for those trained to see it. I've never had the gift, much to father's sorrow, but mother is famed for hers. Dharmating father's dice are black demon bone, smooth as polished obsidian, while the Duchess has coated hers in priceless electrum, the only metal that can hold and conduct core magic without loss. They glitter like silver in one of her hands. Instead of a hanzar, she holds a surgical lance in the other. Olive, let's start with you. I sigh, holding out my arm. Mother has the process down to a ritual. She disinfects the pad of my left index finger, then uses the lance to pierce a tiny scar, the precise place she's taken blood from countless times over the years. 5, 6, 7. She squeezes a single drop of blood onto each of the dice, then puts pressure on the wound until it closes. It heals in moments, but the scar is always itchy. The Duchess says it's my imagination. She puts her hands together, dice clattering as she gently shakes them to distribute the blood. I've never seen the Duchess pray. Even at cathedral services, she does no more than bow her head respectfully. A ruler must act in the interest of her people, she taught, not in what she imagines is the interest of the divine. But in the ritual of the dice, even mother acknowledges a higher power. Creator, giver of light and life, I seek knowledge of my child, Olive Paper of Hollow, whose father is Arman Jardir of Krasia. What is the source of the attack on Olive's life last new moon? As she speaks, the dice begin to glow, brighter and brighter until they shine through her fingers. She casts them down, and there is a flash as the tumbling bones are pulled out of their natural trajectories by the wards of prophecy. They roll to a stop, throbbing softly with dim light, and everyone holds their breath. At least at first. Darren, Selin, and Mrs. Bales lean in, but I can tell the collection of symbols means little to them. After Mother studies the throw in silence for long moments, the tension wanes, and they withdraw. Darren flits across the room, scampering like a squirrel to perch atop a high shelf of books. He seems far away, but I know he can see, hear, and smell better from that distance than most folks can up close. Selin drifts away next, helping herself to a cup of tea and a biscuit before sitting on a divan and putting her feet on the table. Normally, Mother would snap at her for that, but the Duchess is so focused on the dice, she doesn't even notice. Mrs. Bales stares at the dice long and hard, trying to pierce their mysteries. At last, she huffs and moves away. She walks along a bookcase, running a finger along the spines before selecting a volume. She sits right there on the floor, curling her legs under as she begins to read in ward light. What do you see, Olive? Mother asks quietly. My stomach clenches as I look at the dice. I recognize all the symbols, but I feel just as lost as I did trying to predict the weather with father. Every symbol has multiple meanings, interpreted from context, direction, and proximity to the others. Even after years of training, I've never understood how anyone makes sense of it. Mother points to where a die with a rock ward and a die with a wind ward have fallen beside each other. This grouping was one of the first I ever threw, when Father began instructing me. I was so sure I knew what it meant, and Father called me an arrogant idiot girl. Were you right? I ask. Mother shrugs. I was lucky. The future is a story, and there are many ways to tell the same story. It might not mean now what it meant then. What was that? I'm unused to the sound of humility in the Duchess's voice, and I'm not sure I care for it. If she's not sure, then what chance have I? Rock and wind wards intersecting can mean a mountain. Mother traces invisible lines where the ward edges of the dice would meet, then gestures back to the die showing the rock ward. But the rock ward is upside down. What do you think that means? Inversion often means opposition, I recite from the text. And what is the opposition of a mountain? Mother asks. I hesitate. The Duchess loves to ask questions like this one, treating my answer like some invisible exam. I hate it, even as my stomach burns with the need to win her approval. But what is the opposite of a mountain? A lake? The sea? The sky? I look at Mother's face, silently testing each against her serene facade. If I think out loud, she will critique each guess. But however patient she appears, every question required to circle the right answer will be held against me in the Duchess's esteem. I close my eyes, imagining a mountain. I'd never seen one until the Borough Tour, but I remember them now, standing proudly along the horizon. I think of their shape, how they displace the air around them. I try to imagine the opposite of that. But there is only air, filling the space that was once occupied by the mountain. Could that be it? An upside-down rock ward and a wind ward cancel each other? Again I look at Mother, testing the answer against her. The Duchess loves trick questions that require a bold answer. But she also loves questions that are deceptively simple, masked in complexity. Creator, help me. If I guess something bold and wrong, I think back to her words. The rock ward is upside down. Invert a mountain, and you don't get empty air. You get displaced soil. Valley, I blurt, before I can overthink it. Mother turns back to the dice, but there is a faint hint of upward curl at the very edge of her lips. Mother is stingy with praise. When I was younger, these little successes would ease the burning in my stomach, at least for a while. But now I know better. This was only the beginning. Mother grills me for hours, as Darren and Mrs. Bales silently eavesdrop. Selin, at least, has given me a bit of privacy by falling asleep on the divan. The questions are endless, some simple, some difficult, and some deceptive. This is how Mother teaches, not with lectures or books, just a slow interrogation with bits of knowledge dropped like breadcrumbs along the way. Mother leads me about the bookcases, pulling tomes of foretelling off the shelves and piling them in my arms. I consult passages as she directs, reading silently even as Mother recites them from memory. Then back to the dice for more questions, altering the meanings we first divined based on the passages I've read. Next, she takes me to stand on the great rug in the centre of the library, woven into a perfect map of the known world. A globe cut and flattened like an orange peel. We stand between the mountains of Milne and the shores of the Crasian Sea, but there are whole continents beyond, marked only with their names from the old world, before the Callings returned. That was hundreds of years ago. Who can say what's there now? Such places could have been destroyed in the return, or turned into something entirely other than what they were in the old world, much like Hollow and the Crasian Empire.
or they could be exactly the same, unthreatened by a demon hive, even as our lands descended into chaos. Mother paces the rug carefully, counting out calculations I deduced after 90 minutes of hard questioning. There was no hint of a smile on Mother's face then. I've grown increasingly nauseous as it has dragged on, and I fear I will sick up if things continue much longer without a break. A mimic demon hungers beneath a city in an eastern mountain valley. Mother speaks the words with finality. Here. She waves a foot vaguely over a valley in the eastern mountains, covering an area that might be hundreds of square miles. It was the country of Rusk, once upon a time. And there was more than one city, and Creator knew how many villages in the area indicated. The book she was reading thumps to the floor as Mrs. Bales dissipates into smoke, flowing across the room to rematerialize right between us on the floor. I hop back with a gasp. Mimics are like sheepdogs. Mrs. Bales sounds skeptical. They keep the other quarrelings in line, but they ain't exactly known as great thinkers. Prince Irivan said the demons in the desert have evolved, Mother says. Mimics follow victims, learning their names, then taking the form of someone trusted to call out and lure them away from the wards. They may not be master tacticians, but they are cunning. Mrs. Bales nods. Ay, and maybe the mines kept them dumb. Don't want the sheepdogs starting to think for themselves. But if this one's been on its own for 15 years, Mother says, then maybe it ain't him, Mrs. Bales says. Just a wasp nest we need to smoke out of the barn. I should be relieved to have the focus off me, but I feel even sicker. Then why would it be after me? Mrs. Bales shrugs. Any mimic demon that survived the purge would remember your mam and me, if they smelled our blood on you. At the same time, I hate to pick holes in an answer I like, but the puzzle doesn't fit. The Tor was hundreds of miles from this valley. Tibbetts Brook is hundreds of miles beyond that. Mimics can dissipate, same as me, Mrs. Bales says. They can cross 1,000 miles like skipping over a puddle. Mrs. Bales looks at me a long moment, then turns back to Mother. Girl's got a point, though. Need a big ripping evolution to go from learning to say someone's name to coordinating attacks all over Theza. A little bit of tension eases. The need to impress Mrs. Bales is almost as strong as the need to impress Mother. Agreed. The Duchess turns to eye Darren, still perched atop the bookshelf, watching and listening to every word. We need to know more.